I think we really got something in.
What do we got?
An idea.
What idea?
An idea for the show.
I still don't know what the idea is.
It's about nothing.
Right.
Everybody's doing something. We'll do nothing.
The Nightcap.
They say, what's your show about? I say, nothing.
There you go.
I think you may have something here.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
You know what I'm just realizing? So every time when I'm getting ready for the show, I'm thinking, okay, it's 7 o'clock. And I look around, I'm seeing, okay, is there an NBA game on? Is there an NHL game on? There's got to be playoffs going on at some point. And I don't know if this is controversial. I don't think it is. I enjoy the first and second round of the NBA and NHL playoffs way more than I do the conference finals and the finals. And that, I think, goes for college basketball, too. I'll take volume to some extent over quality and quantity over quality when it comes to the playoffs here, because especially hockey, it seems like it's a lot of the same. So yeah, I just turned on my TV in here and I'm looking for a playoff game, and I got Keith Jones and Patrick Sharp analyzing Bruins and Hurricanes, and that kind of stinks when you only get one game a night, two at least, since you got two sports. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase here on WGR. We have NHL playoff action for you again tonight. The Bruins going for a sweep over the Carolina Hurricanes. Game 4 will be broadcast here on WGR in just under an hour. Puck drop at 8 o'clock. Our coverage starts at 7:45. And the playoffs have been on my mind today because I'm not a big referee guy, I think you could put it that way. I think that the existence of replay has basically come to us because there has been no development of officiating in sports in the last few years, in the last decades. And last night was more evidence of that. And I feel bad for San Jose Sharks fans, because what can you do as a Sharks fan and what can you do as the Sharks? But they are flying through the playoffs right now on bad call after bad call after bad call. And you know what? The Sharks should get an asterisk if they win the Stanley Cup because of the amount of bad calls that have gone in their favor that have decided games. Also, it's not like they've had a bunch of calls. Like, they have had big calls at big moments on goals that have helped them along their way to where they're now leading in the Western Conference Finals. They had a garbage call in Game 7 against Vegas. It should not have been a major penalty. We all know it. The league apologized to Vegas. That should tell you how bad a call it was, because you got the league apologizing to the team on the other end of it. There was a garbage offside call against Colorado that reversed a goal. I don't know how the officials looked on their tablets, whatever they got in the penalty box, zoomed in and tried to go pixel by pixel to determine if Landeskog for the Avalanche was offside. And they determined that he was. I don't think anyone saw a definitive look to overturn it, but apparently the refs did, and they decided to overturn that goal, and eventually the Avalanche lost that series. That goal would have been probably kept them in it. Garbage call last night. I mean, this NHL playoffs, this Stanley Cup playoffs, is kind of lacking for storylines. You don't have the Penguins. You don't have Crosby, Malkin. You don't have the Capitals trying to repeat. You don't have the Kings and Blackhawks anymore. They're long gone. And you don't have the Lightning, who are like the dream team. You don't have any of that. And you know what this is becoming the playoffs of? This is becoming the playoffs of replay. These playoffs, the refs have made so many bad judgment calls that, or just missed stuff, that we're going to get expanded replay in the NHL because of these playoffs. I can't see a scenario where that doesn't happen. You've got a glove pass last night. Clear as day. It happened quick, sure. Of course it did. And Pete DeBoer, the Sharks coach, and I'm not expecting Pete DeBoer, the Sharks coach, to come out and say, yeah, it was a garbage call. I'm not expecting that. I'd like to see it once in a while, though. That'd be refreshing if, like, Eric Carlson had just come out today and said, yeah, you know what? We got a big break, because that was a terrible call. That was a terrible job by the officials. And the reason you have replay is because, yes, the official's job is hard. You have stuff that's happening within milliseconds, as Pete DeBoer put it. It is happening within milliseconds. So, therefore, don't the refs need all the help they can get? Because it's becoming very clear that they need it. Last night, a game was decided in overtime on a glove pass that should have been called a glove pass, and it wasn't. And you've got a situation where with just the... This is not a new thing. Like, I can't even really tout technology here, because the technology that allowed 20,000 people in that arena to see that the goal shouldn't have counted was invented 30 years ago. It's just instant replay and a screen. It's not much. That's all you need. It's quick. So why do we have a system set up where, like I said, 20,000 people in an arena, fans, coaches, players, executives, owners, they can all watch a screen and see a blatant error that wrongfully determined the winner of a game, and they saw it within seconds. Within seconds, everyone knew that goal shouldn't have counted. But yet, four people out of 20,000 in that arena were not allowed to look to see if it should have been overturned. And they were the four people that needed to look. The only four where it mattered. Where it mattered to how they're doing their jobs and if they're doing their jobs well. Why is it that everyone in the building but the four people whose jobs it is to determine if a rule is being broke are not allowed to see it? I think it's a completely messed up system, and I think it doesn't have to be long. And the NHL has kind of butchered this. Sports in general has butchered this, where replay itself is a good idea. You are correcting things that should be corrected instantaneously, like in soccer. But leagues have been butchering this because they're making it take forever. And the NHL, like I said, last night, everyone in the rink would have looked at that, and you heard the reaction, and you saw the Blues players, Braden Schenn, slamming a stick against the glass, Jordan Binnington, the goalie, doing the same, talking to the refs as they're leaving, like, how can you leave with this result? And really, I don't even have confidence that the NHL would get it right, because how long would it take the refs to make that call, even when 10 seconds after it happened, everyone knew it was a bad decision? I don't know. I think the ultimate goal for replay and for sports needs to be to get to the point where last night can be fixed, can be corrected within seconds, because we should have the capability to do that. And last night, the NHL did a bad job not having rules in place to where the refs can't look at that. They can look at if it went across the line, I guess. They can look if the goalie was interfered with. They can look at if it was offsides. But for some reason, we've drawn this imaginary line at past that. You can't look if it's gone off the mesh. You can't look if it's a blatant glove pass. And I don't know. If you're going to look at goals, just look at all of goals. Wasn't that a rule at one point that all goals were reviewed in Toronto in the Situation Room? What happened to that? Are they supposed to pretend that they can't see glove passes and they're only supposed to look at the goal line? The NBA is starting to do a good job of this. The NBA is now able to correct things. I think I have this right. They're able to correct things that they didn't go to the replay monitor for. I remember a situation way back, I think it was in the NFL, where they were looking at, what were they looking at? They were looking at if a pass was a forward pass. Or no, they were looking at if it was a fumble. I think it was a Packers game, because I remember Brett Favre playing, and this was a while ago. They were looking at if a fumble had been caused by the ground. And when they went to the replay monitor to look at it, there was something about it being, whoever threw the pass was past the line of scrimmage. So really, the play should have been a penalty in the first place. But because they went to the monitor to review a fumble, they couldn't overturn the illegal forward pass, even though they were staring at an illegal forward pass, because they weren't supposed to be reviewing that. Like, you're just supposed to pretend? And I feel like that's what a lot of sports leagues are still stuck in, like that mode. And the NBA is starting to get out of that. Because in the NBA now, if you're reviewing one thing, if you're reviewing if something was goaltending, and on the screen you can see that the guy was elbowed in the face and you missed it, well, guess what? Now you can make that call. Now you can give a guy a flagrant because he clearly got away with elbowing someone in the face. And I think that's just something that a lot of other leagues need to pick up. I don't want to spend all the time on the show tonight on replay and officiating. It really wears you out. But I really think this is becoming the Stanley Cup playoffs of, like, the story of this playoffs looking back in history will be this is the final straw that broke the camel's back, where all of replay starts to flow into the sport, where they really start to expand it. More good stuff on Ralph Kruger today. I'm starting to realize that I think I like the idea a lot, like a lot, because he was my guy from the get-go. And that kind of, that feels good. That feels good. The fact that you can kind of pick a name out, and the fact that he was with Southampton at the time, a soccer team, to be able to pick that name out and for me to be kind of on that train since the beginning, it feels good that he was actually hired. He feels like my guy, and the Sabres hired my guy. So I think there is definitely reason to be optimistic about the idea, but I think I'm feeling even more optimistic than most. When you boil it down, though, as I'm starting to sit with the coaching hire, it's been a couple days now, 2 days, since we really found out like this was going to happen. It's really been 4 or 5 days, maybe even longer than that, actually, I think, since it was the weekend, last weekend, that we knew like he's the leader in the clubhouse. Now that you're starting to get away from it, away from the coach search, it's only a coach, okay? And I'm a believer that the coach is not the most important thing on a hockey team. I think he's way down the list. If I had to rank the most important positions on a hockey team, I think I'd have to put like number one center first, number one defenseman second, maybe general manager third, goaltender would be in there somewhere, number two center. Then you'd have, I'm pretty sure I would put a coach somewhere after your third or fourth defenseman and somewhere after your fourth or fifth best forward in terms of importance. I really believe that. I think your roster is what is going to drive if you are good or not. I think the coach is only going to influence that. So I really think that going into the rest of this offseason, this is where these next couple months will really determine what the Sabres are going to be next season. That's what Greg Wyshynski talked about a lot earlier today with Chopin the Bulldog.
The real issue for me is necessarily Ralph Kruger, who I think is going to be okay and is going to figure out some things, especially on the defensive side of the puck. The intrigue for me is what Jason Botterill does this summer, because you could make the argument that he's on strike two right now as far as the trade that he's made in consecutive summers, and with the O'Reilly trade, one that I don't think necessarily got the return that everyone maybe thought it did at the time. You know, what he ends up doing with this roster, and in particular in restructuring the blue line, I think is going to be even more prevalent than anything Ralph Kruger does behind the bench.
There's Greg Wyshynski, and I think that's right. I think what they do with the blue line, we have been waiting 5 years plus for them to fix that. And they've tried. Murray tried to throw some Band-Aids over the problem with Josh Georges and Cody Franzen, and Botterill tried to make his moves by trading for Scandella and trading for Nathan Beaulieu. And really, they didn't get anywhere until they won a lottery and they got Dahlin. When are the Sabres really going to do some real, you know, due diligence? And like, they're doing their due diligence, but when are they really going to start to be successful by their own doing on the defense? Because that is still a problem with this team, and it has been for years, and they have yet to fix it. You've got free agents this year. I don't know if you want to do that. Tyler Myers is a free agent. His name always sticks out to me because I liked him as a Sabre, and he's back on the open market. Dan Hamhuis, I think, is a guy. Like Erik Karlsson, if you want to go really big. Like, there are moves to be made on the blue line this offseason in free agency, but I don't know. We'll see what happens with the Sabres. We'll get more into that in a little bit. We're going to play back Thomas Vanek, though, here. I'm okay calling him a Sabre legend. I think if you're fifth all-time on the team in goals, then it's okay to call you a Sabre legend. He had some really good insight on Ralph Kruger as a coach, and he was on with the Instigators yesterday. He played for Kruger while on Team Europe at the World Cup of Hockey. I want to talk a little bit more about that, too, because I actually saw Team Europe in action live. I went to Toronto for the World Cup of Hockey when it happened 3 years ago, and I was at one of the games that Team Europe played. I remember a couple of things from it. I'll share that when we come after this. Here's Thomas Vanek with the Instigators from yesterday.
We're back with more of the Instigators.
Thomas Vanek joining the show. Morning,
what's
Vanner.
Up,
how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing great. Marty's in studio here, Old Man River, myself, and talking some coaches. We heard you getting ready for golf. Marty's dying to say something here.
I want to know where you're playing today, Van. I want to see if it's a good course.
It's It's a great course. It's called Stone Ridge in Stillwater, Minnesota. Best greens in the state.
Yeah. Guy signed a $50 million offer sheet, Marty. I don't think he's playing some dirt track. All right?
Just checking. Just checking.
Hey? Hey, wait, yeah, well, anyway, Van, we know if you're playing golf, it's on a top tier course. Listen, let's talk more top tier. You had Ralph Krueger at the top tier tournament there, the World Cup, and you had some. River pulled up an old school article with you in it, and you had some very high praises to sing about Ralph Krueger.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, go back. Ralph started his coaching career in Austria, so. I've known of him since I was literally 4 or 5 years old. He took this small town team and just built it into a European dynasty, which at that time, it was, it's never been done, before and after he left. So he is, again, he's highly respected, and I've known that for, 30 years now of my life. But then when I had a chance to actually play for him at the World Cup, that's when I, really realized how good he is. Not just of a coach, but how great of a person. He's by far the best motivator I've ever had, to deal with. So, again, to me, he's one of the best people I've ever met in my lifetime. And I'm glad I got to meet him, and I'm super happy for him. He got this job. I think people in Buffalo are going to really love him. I think it's a great hire.
Okay, let me ask you a question, Van. You talk about the World Cup. I want to know what specifically did Ralph Krueger do in the World Cup? Because you guys had a really tough pre-tournament games. You lost like 7-4 and 4-0. And then you got into the tournament, and it seems like your team was different. What specifically, as a coach, was he able to do for that team to be able to come together in such a short time?
Well, with that team, I don't know if it was so much about coaching. It was about, and that's what's so great about Ralph. I think he can adjust and adapt so good. So in those two games, like you mentioned, against the young kids, we didn't have a chance. So again, all of us, who made on Team Europe, we're all good hockey players. So he knew it wasn't about hockey. So he just had to motivate us in a different way, and he was able to. And again, it took us a few days to adjust to him, to his philosophy and whatever. But after being around him with the whole team setting for 3-4 days, we're like, holy crap, this guy is unbelievable. He spends time with each and everyone. And then it's not just, make believe that he cares about you. After 2 days of being around him, not even 2 days, 10 minutes, he cares about you. And that's such a big thing, as you guys know. I mean, if you have someone who really believes in you and cares about you and not just the top guy, that's when you're a real good person. I think it really came out during that tournament.
Thomas Vanek joining us to talk about Ralph Krueger. Played for him at the World Cup of Hockey, but also known him from back in Austria for nearly 30 years. What are his philosophies, Vanner? I mean, what's his – I know it's a short tournament, and tournaments are different, but what are his defensive zone philosophies? What are his neutral zone philosophies? Where does he believe that hockey games are won and lost?
Well, I can't speak, I can't speak of what Ralph's philosophy is, because like you said, it was a small tournament. Mm-hmm. And again, we had Paul Maurice as the assistant coach from Winnipeg, who was on our staff for that World Cup team. So he did a lot of that. And that, again, speaks so highly of Ralph that he's the head coach, but he knows he's got, there's a reason he brought, Coach Maurice on staff to do those things. So I think that's another great thing. I think a lot of coaches, they want to put their hands into everything, where he knows, hey, I'm really good at this. You're awesome at this. He's okay with delegating. Not saying that he didn't coach us. He coached us too, and his philosophy was up-tempo and all this the fun stuff that everyone wants to hear. But again, his philosophy was, I need to motivate these guys, get them up to speed, and let Paul and the other assistant coaches do the X's and O's, and it worked out great for us.
Thomas Vanek on the line. We know you have a tea time. We'll let you go in just a couple minutes here. Listen, we know what's important. It's the off season. You got to get your rounds in. But
I only got about 2 weeks left, and then school is out, so golf season will be over shortly.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you've it's weird because you came into this league and I was, I mean, you're 35 years old now, Van. I mean, where does the time go, right? But you've played for now 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We're still trying to chase that record, okay?
Yeah, so I know.
We're still trying
stop
to chase. We're still trying to. But my point is in your time from when you came in to now, have you noticed the change in the players that need the different kind of those philosophies and not necessarily the I don't want to call them bully tactics, but maybe those those tougher style tactics?
Oh, for sure. I mean, again, I think the league is in a good place right now, but it's completely different when I came in and when we came in. You know, it's you know, a lot of teams, a lot of organizations are forcing kids to play because it looks good, in my opinion, you know, to have young kids and then sell tickets, whatever. But in my opinion, it's not always the best thing for the kids. So you definitely have to deal with them different. A lot of them get hyped up at a young age, and they come in, they struggle, and they think the coach doesn't like them. Oh, maybe I should, you know, get traded. Somebody else that would play more there and this. So it's way different. I think kids are a little bit softer nowadays. So, yeah, I think a guy like Ralph is going to be huge because he really can sense that. You know, he knows how to deal with people. So that's his, in my experience, that's his greatest gift. You see, he really knows how to motivate, you know, every single individual. Is he, you know, does he need a hug? Does he need to get yelled at? You know, I think that's what he's going to be really good at.
PD took it easy on you, Van. I'm going to be a lot harder on you. You've had 11 coaches.
Boy.
I'm counting 11 coaches. So it started with Lindy Ruff, Ron Rolston, Jack Capuano, Michel Therrien, Mike Yeo, John Torchetti, Jeff Blashill twice, Gerard Gallant, Tom Rowe a little bit, Travis Green, and John Tortorella. Which one does Ralph Krueger remind you more of, or what style of your former coaches is closer to Ralph Krueger?
I don't know. I think he's a mix. Like, my favorite coaches, you know, believe it or not, Lindy's still on top of my list just because, you know, as much of a hard he was on me and whatever, he brought the best out of me, and I respected that. And I don't mind the yelling and screaming.
Ribs is laughing right now, but that's okay.
and you know what? Torch was the same. Like, I tell you, when I got traded to Columbus, I'm like, how is this going to work, you know? And it was awesome. I love Torch. I mean, he was great. You know, he was awesome for me. So I think Ralph is not at that level, but I think he's a mix of, you know, a Gallant, and he has that attitude of a Lindy and of a Torch. You know, so like I said, he's very good at knowing what to be at what time. So I think it's tough to say he's one of these guys, but he's his own guy. But I think he can be, you know, various difference of a lot of these guys in a good way.
We are on the line right now with Pavel Datsyuk. I mean, Thomas Vanek.
Hey, I swear I was cleaning out my basement last year, and I am telling you, I still have the picture, Van, from the Halloween party when you showed up in head-to-toe Detroit Red Wings gear and Datsyuk's jersey. I still have it. It's absolutely perfect. People on Twitter want to know if you're coming back, but we don't have time to talk about that because you have a tee time to hit. Good luck. Hit him into the woods, and we'll talk to you later, Van.
All right. Thanks, boys. Thanks for having me on.
Good stuff with Thomas Vanek. We'll take a timeout here, and we'll come back a little bit of NBA talk, a little bit more NHL playoff talk, and also Ralph Krueger as well before we get out of here. For Bruins and Hurricanes, Game 4 coverage starts at 7:45 here in WGR. Puck drop at 8. It's the Nightcap with Jody Biasi on WGR.
What happened to Ralph is he just didn't get a chance to see it through in Edmonton. He's a really smart and interesting guy. You guys have had a lot of negative energy around your organization the last several years. It takes some courage to hire this guy, but I'm here to tell you, if the Pegulas, if they stick with this, they might get the type of reward that Sabres fans deserve.
Bob Stauffer, 630 Ched in Edmonton, Oilers Now. He's the host on Ralph Krueger. So I mentioned this earlier. I went to meet a couple friends a couple years ago, 2016. We find out this World Cup of Hockey is happening. And some neat ideas, like Team North America forever, right? TN Nation. Those of you that know what I'm saying, you get it. That was cool. Team Europe, or as I call them, Team Toothpaste, because they look like they their logo looked like a toothpaste logo, essentially. If you haven't seen it before, it definitely looks like one. And Ralph Kruger was the head coach. So when we went up there for a couple of games, one of the games that we went to, because we went for the whole day, was an afternoon game. And the early game that we went to was Team Europe versus the Czech Republic. And that would have been Ralph Kruger behind the bench for Team Europe. And a couple of things that I noticed thinking back about them was, and I had to watch a couple of their games back to kind of like stimulate these thoughts, but there was... I remember there were defensemen on their offsides a lot. And put that to what the Sabres are doing now. And I like that for Rasmus Dahlin. So Kruger seemed to not be afraid to put defensemen on their offside on the blue line. And to me, Dahlin coming into the NHL, he talked about the fact that he usually played his offside. That felt more natural to him. And what ended up happening was, even though he played a little bit of that, Housley, for the most part, had him playing on the left side. So I wonder if maybe we'll see a little bit of a switcheroo there, where Dahlin becomes more of a right defenseman because he likes to play on his offside, but we'll see on that. The other thing, too, is like they were playing Czech Republic in that game, and that team was not overly talented, but... it was pretty even, I would say, and really the puck possession was there. The shot attempts seemed to be there. It seemed like it was quality over quantity, and watching back some of those games over the past couple days, like, that kind of rung true again, even against the better teams. Like, they were going for grade A chances rather than three grade D chances, and I think that's the ideology you want to have in your head coach. So I'm optimistic about Kruger, and if you don't know a lot about that tournament, like Team Europe, it was essentially a team of European players not named or not from Russia, not from Sweden, not from Finland, and not from the Czech Republic. So anybody else. So you had your German players in there. You had Slovakian players in there. You had a Slovenia, so you would have had, Anze Kopitar, Pierre Ladmore Belmar from France. So you had some guys from other all over the place, Denmark. And, like, it wasn't an overly, like, super... it wasn't a superstar team. Yaroslav Halak was the goalie. All right. He's a backup in the league. Chara, Christian Ehrhoff, Roman Josi's a stud. Luka Spiza, Seidenberg, Sakara, Streit. Like, that's your blue line. That's not great. And then Drysdale's a great player up front. But other than that, him and Kopitar, it's Vanek and Zuccarello and Tatar and Franz Nielsen, Niederreiter. Like, kind of, like, NHL players, but not really the greats, I would say. And interesting about that tournament, a lot of Sabre coach candidates were in there. Todd McClellan was the coach of Team North America. Ralph Kruger was the coach of Team Europe. And Rickard Granberg was the coach of Team Sweden. So that's pretty interesting, too. All right, I got to get out of here because we got to go to the Game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals between the Boston Bruins and the Carolina Hurricanes. The Bruins are going for the sweep. I'm at this point, you know what? I don't want to root for either team. Just whatever. Boston, just win it tonight. End it. I don't want to have to root or I don't want to have to hear about that series again. How's that? I mean, the Bruins, I'd never want to root for them, and you never want to root for the Hurricanes, so why not just get the series over with as quick as possible? So I guess in that, and with that logic, I'm rooting for the Bruins tonight. Again, hate these playoffs. All right, thanks everybody for listening. Stay tuned. Coverage of the Stanley Cup playoffs continues or starts next here on WGR.